Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
And to our first visiting critic for 2025, because every Friday, as you know, we get a non-professional reviewer to experience something that they would never normally consider doing. Get it out of their comfort zones and rate it for our listeners. So we sent criminologist and community worker Trina O'Connor to Smithfield in Dublin to partake in this growing hobby sport of axe throwing. Good morning, Trina O'Connor.
Good morning. I'm lucky to make it back alive.
And you didn't bring any hatchets with you. That's a good
sign.
No,
not today.
First of all, where is your comfort zone? Are you? Do you have a very rigid kind of place that you like to be?
No, I'm quite adventurous. I kind of give most things a go. Yeah, yeah. So I was delighted to be asked to do this. It was really something very unusual for me.
They tell me that you give a lot of things a go every year. You kind of go, right, I'm doing something I never thought of before.
I do, yeah, yeah. I'm quite, I like to learn a new skill every year, particularly in August when the young people that I work with are not around. So it gives me time to recover in case I injure myself. Last year, I took some golf lessons in August with a professional golf instructor.
Wow.
Yet to go out and play a game of golf.
Did you not play golf ever?
Never, never. Right. And during one of our, what's it called, the place where you go and you hit them, what's it called?
The driving range.
Thank you. Yeah, shows how much I remember. The driving range, I hit the basket. I got a hole in one, apparently. He said I was very good. I didn't really know what I was doing. But I'm looking forward to playing golf once the weather picks up. Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
I think it'd be a new hobby.
Oh, that'd be a major hobby.
Yeah, and then I did a road trip last year because I love Ireland. Absolutely love it. And I like to be a tourist in Ireland. And in August, I do a lot of Dublin tourism, particularly.
Great idea. We don't think of that at all, do we?
We don't. And last year, I did the Wild Atlantic Way with three cousins from three different parts of the world. So we all met up. It was fantastic. We went out to see the dolphins and the seals and on a rib. And
not fungi, sadly.
No. We saw where you used to sleep, though.
Yeah, okay.
They brought us
really, that's the thing we do now. I love it. Where's home for you? Are you from Dublin?
So I'm a Dub, yeah. So I'm on the north side of Dublin. You probably can tell from the accent.
Ah, you can't always.
Yeah.
You could be from anywhere in this country.
Absolutely.
And you end up with a parent's accent. And a criminologist, what is a criminologist?
So there's lots of different types of criminologists. But what I do, I'm a community criminologist. So what I do is I look at crime and see how it impacts on communities. And then a lot of the work I'm involved in is creating interventions to try and put roadblocks in place to stop young people getting involved in criminality and stop crime being a career for them. So early intervention work is a lot of the work that I do, because prior to qualifying I had studied psychology, so I understand psychology of crime.
Yes.
So I qualified with a honours degree in psychology, and I've worked in the community for 30 plus years.
Wow.
So yeah, so a lot of, I know I'm very young looking, is that what you were going to say? So a lot of the people that I've worked with over the years, crime has always kind of been on the kind of the outskirts of what their issues are for a lot of them.
Really?
It might be adverse childhood experiences, or it might be trauma in the home, or it might be addiction, mental health issues as well. And sometimes that can be an avenue for young people to get involved in crime.
Right.
as a way out of poverty. And I think that the key to all of the crime that I see is poverty, whether it's poverty financially or whether it's poverty of education or poverty of time or any kind of poverty, really is at the heart of a lot of the young people that I work with.
And that makes them then very easy to exploit for the drugs gangs
and
dangle all these treats at them.
Yeah, it can do, because if there's a less than perfect home life, they may be looking for some sort of big brother or family or surrogate family. For some of these grooming gangs, and they are gangs and they're very, very organised, they can spot a young person who's vulnerable and they can make promises to them. And we see it. I mean, we see it on the news all the time, young people getting involved in very high level crime, very quickly moving their ways to high level crime. So they might start off maybe buying a bit of weed, and then they're asked to hold a bit of weed. Then sometimes what happens is with these gangs, they'll get the weed removed from that person and say that they were robbed. Then they come back and tell them that they owe them a debt. So that's,
go away.
Yeah,
right.
So that's,
they're
drugs.
Very clever, aren't they?
So that's drugs related intimidation, which is really tricky, because the young people now, what we're talking about, are young people with a dual status. So they're victims of crime, but they're also criminals themselves. So it's a very tricky space for the criminal justice system to navigate. And I think the Department of Justice are doing a lot of work on this through work with University of Limerick through the Greentown, and there's some fantastic people working in there on the bail supervision and all of these different initiatives that are there. But unfortunately, I think we're not planning, we're not forward planning enough, and I do worry with the impact of the mental health crisis that we're seeing in the country of young people, where we're going to be in 10 years' time.
Is one of the big changes you've seen that it's girls as well as boys now getting involved on both sides, both the person bringing a young person in and also the girls being vulnerable too?
Absolutely. So girls are used in different ways by criminal gangs. Sometimes they're used as the ones to groom particularly vulnerable young people, and young people who may be a little bit more neurodiverse might be more at risk. So they might groom them online and coax them into giving photographs of themselves, or indeed giving their bank account details, their Revolut details to be used for money mooling. And the photographs is used for blackmail, to get them to coerce them into doing something like going and collecting something and drop it somewhere. And the young people that are getting coerced online and groomed online are very young. And some parents, I spoke to a parent the other day, and she said to me, "I really don't know how to use any of these apps." And I was saying to her, "Look, just make sure you've got parental controls on it and that kind of thing." So there's a lot of information out there for people, you know.
So is your job, are you intervening when someone's at a low level of crime, or are you trying to get in before any of this happens? What is...
So I'll work with people at any level. So the young people I work with are between 16 and 21. Some are referred to me through the courts, and some are absent from school. So school system didn't work for them. So I work in a second chance education centre, and I manage that centre. And I work with, funded through the ETB, and they're brilliant. They fund us really well. And I work with an amazing team of people that have been there. Many have been there over 20 years. And their experience you couldn't learn in college. You know, they're all very well qualified at what they do, but most of their qualifications come from working on the ground and working with people, because young people that I start working with 30 years ago are very different now. You know, the issues that young people have now are very different. So we have to keep ever changing.
What's the kind of big difference?
So I suppose there's an awful lot of pressure on young people nowadays to grow up very quickly, and I think social media has a role to play in that. I think a lot of parents are out working, so we would have what I would call time poverty there. So parents, both parents have to work in order to pay the mortgage and to keep a roof over the head if they're renting as well. So for young people, they may have to kind of spend a lot of time on their own, or even indeed be responsible for younger siblings. So there's a lot of responsibility on young people. And I think the age group that I work with was very heavily impacted by the pandemic as well.
So that
kind of isolation, many of them failed in school because of that. They couldn't go back to school. So I do see a lot more anxiety in young people. I see a lot of self-diagnosis of anxiety, by the way.
Yeah, too much of it in many ways, and too little in another place.
I have anxiety, and I go, "Have you been diagnosed?" And so I do think with some young people, there's a mental health crisis there. And then the vulnerability, as I said, with lack of parental controls. And because the nuclear family as well, I think the way our living conditions have gone, many families, the extended families, have been broken up where, you know, years ago your granny would live around the corner and stuff, and you'd have the granny could throw an eye. And we don't see that as much now because people are having to move forward.
That's a huge shift.
Yeah.
In your experience then, would you see youth detention or prison being, you know, the answer for some of these offenders?
I think when it comes to crime, I think violent offenders should always serve a prison sentence. I'm not sure when people are in addiction if they should serve a prison sentence as the first protocol, because I think that's a health crisis, and I think we need to be looking at that as a health-led model.
And the addiction continues often when they're incarcerated.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Well, that's the serious job. I almost feel guilty now that we dragged you away from that. But you have to live in the world, don't you? And you're used to getting out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
So we had you axe throwing as a hobby sport, not as some sort of criminologist training or anything like that. This has become a real fun activity and a real bonding exercise, isn't it?
Yeah. So I brought my mother because... my mother has played darts for 50 odd years in the league. And in fact, I played on our darts team at one stage. I was the impact sub, of course. And because darts is huge in Ireland, you can call me Lucy Littler.
exactly.
Anyway, man beat me in the first round. We played three rounds. I won the last two.
So is axe throwing a bit like instead of the dart?
Well, no. Well, there's a technique, I suppose. It's like this eye level stuff. And when we went in, we got there a little bit early, and the guy Emmett was really, really helpful, and he gave us a demonstration and explained to us how to do it and when to release. And when I followed his instruction, I did actually hit the wall. But I did send you a couple of videos, and I don't think I hit the wall
in
any of them.
No. Because that's what you want, isn't it? You want the axe to be embedded.
It looks like a dartboard. So it's like our bullseye, like for archery.
They're projecting. It's very clever, isn't it? So there's timber and they project using a projector.
And it's all kind of computer. So it's kind of person led. So once Emma explained to us how to play, we just had to press the buttons and that. But he did check in on us, and that was really good. I think my mother cheated at one stage and she still didn't win.
Just to clarify for the lawyers, Trina's mum did not cheat. And if she wishes to issue a statement, we just have a good time. By the way, this is Game of Throwing, which is a great name, in Smithfield. And I think they've placed in Scotland and around Ireland as well.
They've a lot in the UK. As far as I understand, their website is .co.uk. So you can Google them there. And for two players, it was €58. But as the numbers go up...
So they encourage people to bring a gang.
Yeah, as the numbers go up, the price goes down. So I think it's €21 after five people. I'd say it'd be a really good activity for a first date. Now,
for a first date?
Yeah. I think it would be, because I don't know if many people would be proficient in it. So it would be a new skill for both people at the same time, you know?
Hand your new lover an axe?
Well, maybe
this
not.
Is coming from a criminologist.
Yeah, maybe not.
There is a huge safety aspect.
Yeah, there is a safety.
What is the safe way to throw an axe?
Okay, so there's a wire cage. So if you're not throwing the axe, you must make sure that you're behind a wire cage.
Okay.
So it's about making it like at a 90 degree angle, the handle to the ceiling.
Oh, okay.
And then pulling it over your head. And when it comes to eye level releasing, you see I'm a pro now. When it comes to eye level releasing.
So you've got your two hands in the air holding the axe.
You can use two hands or one hand.
And when it reaches your eye level, that's when you're releasing.
Yeah.
Or you could do one-handed as well.
I tried the one-handed. I don't think I managed at all to get a shot in one-handed. I haven't got the strength now.
You need two hands. I see most people seem to be throwing with two hands.
Yeah,
Is it a heavy, the axe?
No, it's just a normal axe. I actually thought it might be a little bit lighter than a normal axe, to be honest, but I couldn't be sure. It's a long time now since I've chopped wood. But
We always call them hatchets.
Hatchets, yeah.
I think the technical term is if it's a multi-tool, it does other things, then it's a hatchet and the rest of them are axes.
Okay. Right, well, I'm not sure whether it was a hatchet or an axe.
Never mind that. Yeah. The game itself then, how does it work? Is it you're against your mum?
Yeah. So it's 10 rounds, and so that means you have 10 throws. And on the board, there's different numbers depending on the ring that you hit. So the outer ring is 2, then the next one 4, then 6 is the middle. And then on the last throw, a couple of extra scores, I think it's 10, appears on the outer rings, and you have to try and get them. But sure, I was just happy to get them in the board. I wasn't aiming for anything. But I'm sure as you got better and better, and I know within the game of throwing, all of the staff every week do a competition, because the highest you can get is 64 on 10 throws, and they put up the highest score that the person got, and then people can compete to beat that higher score. And I said, oh, that's brilliant. I said, 54 is up on the board. And he said, yeah. And I said, and what do you win? And he goes, nothing really. I said, oh, it's just bragging rights. And he said, yeah, so it's just bragging rights.
And if you miss, you have to hit a button or something, do you?
You have to hit a button. When you miss, you have to press the button to say that you missed, and then it moves on to your next.
Is this where your allegation of cheating against your mum has come into play?
Okay. Yes.
Unproven allegations.
Yes. And she took one of my scores, absolutely.
What's your mum's name?
Catherine.
Is she retired or is she still working away?
Well, no, mum, no, she's not retired. Mum won't retire. So mum was a market trader for years, and she has a small B&B now, and she still does a little bit of market trading now and again at car boot sales and that. So
very good.
She loves
it. Once that's in the blood.
Oh, yeah.
Did you not follow into the market trading?
Well, over the years, we would have. I mean, I would have went out and walked in Fairy House and that with my mum and walked on the hills at one stage. I remember walking on the hills, crazy place, as a child, like the hills. Yeah, you could get anything on the hills. You could get, like, you know, an elephant or a television, you know. The hills.
What's the hills?
It was a really old market that used to just pop up on, I think it was a Saturday morning, and you needed to be there about 4 o'clock in the morning in order to get your spot, you know. And you could literally buy anything there. It was a lot of secondhand stuff, clothes. It would have been in the 70s and 80s, like, you know. Yeah. And I remember going in with mum and dad and selling there, because my mother's mother had a tea room on the docks, which was very unusual at the time for a woman to have a business. And she used to, you know, the banana boats and that come in and she'd sell to them. So there's a lot of traders there in the background, you
know. Great history there, isn't it? Jonesboro, we used to have up around the border, which is
I think my mum used to do markets. So she did a lot of markets around the country as well at one stage. So no, she's not retired. You can't make her retire.
Couldn't retire from that trade.
She's always doing something.
You're also as a criminologist, serious job. You're also doing something fun. You're co-writing a crime novel.
I am. Yeah, with a really interesting man from New Zealand, Justin Brown. So I met Justin actually through my mum's B&B, and he.
So your mother has a B&B.
Small B&B, and she's gas. And
much of work that goes on in this family. Yeah, yeah. Okay, go on, sorry.
So Justin, I don't want to meet any guests, mum. And she's like, you need to meet this guy. He's writing a novel, and he's never written crime before. And anyway, between the jigs and the reels, I met him, and he was a fascinating man. He has written travel books, and he's a very famous children's author in New Zealand.
Yeah, Justin Brown.
And he had the body of this book. So anyway, he sent it to me, and I sent him back some notes and edits, and then he ended up coming back to Dublin, and we had another chat. So we've agreed to co-write. So we have a 5-series book kind of ready, a series that we want to write. But we're going to finish this first book first and get a publisher. It'd be great as well, you know. We haven't got a publisher yet. So.
Yeah, but he's in the business, so I'm sure he'll find someone. And has he reset the story in Dublin rather than New Zealand?
I was persuasive enough to reset.
I could tell how you could do that.
I said, look, if you want me to write with you, I need to write when I know. So we're looking at Ireland rather than Dublin. Part of it is in Dublin, but it does go around the country as well. We're looking at Galway, Wicklow. There's a few different interesting bits in it.
And can you tell us anything about it?
No.
Absolutely. Because it's a 5-part series, it's going to need a strong leading character.
That's separate. So this novel is about, it's about crime and it's about a circus, would you believe? So it was really funny that I was going axe throwing, because I felt like I was in a circus. I might even include a bit of axe throwing now because it wasn't in it.
I presume your mum works at a circus at some point because she's had every other job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's going to be, we will watch out for that.
I'll come in and talk to you
about that. And Justin, and he's in New Zealand.
Yeah, so I'm hoping to get out to New Zealand in the next couple of months. My sister lives in New Zealand. She's just gone home after being home for Christmas. I picked her up in the airport dressed up as a unicorn, an inflatable unicorn. I was telling your research producer there. It was very entertaining for the kids. I was roasting. I was 45 minutes in an inflatable unicorn, about 8 foot tall, thinking nobody would know it was me. And then when I look back at the pictures, it's very obvious it's me. You can see my face. But
I'm losing the track of where we're going. I did not see you in an inflatable unicorn at the end of this conversation.
Nor did my sister coming from New Zealand, but she laughed when she saw me.
By the way, what was Justin Brown doing in Ireland that time?
So he was doing a tour of Ireland for his 50th birthday party. And he was doing a tour and he didn't really know what to do. So I had a plan to do the Wild Atlantic Way already. I had like an 18-page itinerary for mine. So I gave it to him.
Organized.
I know, yeah, my poor cousins. I gave it to him and I said, do this, and or bits of it. And he was absolutely delighted. He did it. So, you know, Lahinch, Port McGee, Carrigsaveen. I did an escape room in the barracks in Carrigsaveen for middle-aged women.
You need to do a tourist book for Ireland as well. Never mind the crime novel. I think you're one of those people who, when someone meets you for the first time, they might stick to you for quite some time. Is that how this New Zealand author is now writing a book with you?
Yeah.
Someone literally is just texting in saying, this woman is a tonic, she should run for the Oris. You've enough to be doing.
You never know.
She's a tonic. That's the same thing. So knowledgeable young people. Have her on again, please, talking about second chance education. Yeah. And that's from down the country. That's a good idea. We'll do that for sure. But to wrap up our visiting critic bit, Trina O'Connor, Game of Throwing Smithfield, you recommend axe throwing.
As a criminologist, no, but as a tourist, absolutely.
As I think a hobby it's great sport fun. Done safely.
It'd be great for team building as well. It'd be brilliant.
They have escape rooms as well down there in Game of Thrones. Trina O'Connor, it's been an absolute pleasure. Good luck to you now and enjoy your weekend.
Thank you.
Well deserved, all the work you do. Back after these.
Email oliver@rte.ie.